I would say the biggest lesson learned is communication. You know, earlier on in my technician days, I'd come in early, I'd stay late, trying to get my work done with nobody around and nobody there to ask more questions, kind of lurk around corners, make sure people weren't around and sneak in, sneak out. You know, as my career grew, I began to realize the importance of communication. You know, my current role right now, working so closely with the lab, we have work that we're trying to schedule, or, you know, something happens midday, the first thought goes to, who do I need to notify? Who does this impact?
This is Facility Rockstars, the podcast that celebrates the unsung heroes of our daily lives, facility professionals. I'm your host, Jay Culbert. Join me as we honor these great leaders, sharing stories, insights, and expertise that empower us all to learn and grow together. Facility Rockstars is sponsored by Colutus, operating the way you operate in order to make your life easier.
Welcome back to Facility Rockstars. I'm thrilled to announce today's guest. He's a certified facility professional. He supervises, mentors, and develops teams of engineers. He's overseeing critical infrastructure. He plays a pivotal role in ensuring operations are running as they should. He's currently the senior manager of facilities and lab infrastructure at Cerevel Therapeutics. Please welcome Mike Rich. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for the invite.
Of course. It's my pleasure. I'm psyched to get into a discussion with you today. So I guess my question for you is, like, we'll jump right into it, right? What's been your biggest lesson learned as a facility manager through the years?
It's hard to narrow down just one. I would say the biggest lesson learned is probably communication. You know, earlier on in my technician days, you know, I'd come in early, I'd stay late, trying to get my work done with nobody around and nobody there to ask more questions, you know, kind of lurk around corners, make sure people weren't around and sneak in, sneak out. But, you know, as my career grew and, you know, I began to realize the importance of communication and, you know, my current role right now, working so closely with the lab, especially, you know, my first, you know, we have work that we're trying to schedule, or, you know, something happens midday, the first thought goes to, who do I need to notify? You know, who does this impact? So I think communication is probably one of the more important aspects that sometimes often gets overlooked as well.
I would agree it's critical. And especially you mentioned in a lab setting, how does it differ, or does it differ in a lab setting as opposed to, you know, any other environment you've been in?
It can get pretty critical, you know, any little change. So particularly now, we work very closely with our animal facility as well. My company is neurological, so they do a lot of studies that are behavioral in nature. So it's not as simple as even sound. So, you know, impacts of sound with work going on, airflow, you know, every little aspect could be critical to their studies.
And in terms of the, I didn't know you had an animal facility, actually. So is that on site where you are, or?
Yes.
Another location? Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Smaller than what I've been used to, but.
Yeah, right.
We do have one.
So in terms of, we didn't even think about the sound aspect, right? So that's interesting. Is there a communication tree, or what's your preferred method of communication, you know, with your team or maybe outside your team?
We have shared calendars with our team, views into other shared calendars for the animal facility team as well. And then just in addition to the general lab also. So any type of work we try to schedule, you know, we're looking at potentially 3 or 4 different calendars to get that okay.
Got it. So, and you did say it's hard to nail down one lesson learned. So we can cover, you know, I mean, I know there's a ton of them, so we can definitely cover a handful of them. On the communication piece, is there any type of, like, how do you prepare for proper communication? Is there any preparation, framework or anything like that?
That gets pretty tricky sometimes too, because people are very particular about their methods. I've dealt with some people that, you know, they want everything in an email, so there's a paper trail going back. Other people want that face-to-face or if, you know, a phone call. a conversation. So it's really, you have to feel out your audience and know, you know, what type of communication works best, and as well as factor in the urgency. You know, if something's happens midday and, you know, we need to respond quickly, you know, email might not be seen till the end of the day or potentially the next day with, you know, hybrid schedules in play.
Got it.
So a phone call may work best.
I remember one of our mutual friends, I think he referred to it as the drive-by in the hallway.
Yeah.
Right. You know, when there isn't any documentation, does that happen to you? If so, like, how do you handle that?
Absolutely. So we actually just put in a CMMS system within the past few months. So up until then, the main source of our workload was the drive-bys and, you know, somebody grabbing you in the hallway, hey, I need this, hey, I need that, hey, can we do this? So it happens, you know, as we begin to get rolling with the CMMS, we're trying to move away from that and move to more records-based, but the conversations still take place and the asks still happen.
That's where our follow-through has to be stellar, right?
Absolutely.
Everything we're keeping up here. Anything else around communication, Mike, in general, like anything in terms of external versus internal, and how do you juggle it all? Any best practices you could share with the audience? I'm sure that appreciate, I would as well.
Just try to find, you know, with every, you know, whether it be internal with the team or external with vendors, you know, more communication is usually better than less. So if, you know, if one method isn't solving the problem, that you know, sometimes you need to move on, try a second or third even.
You mentioned preparation as I'm trying to remember how we discussed it. It was you know, something around creating lists and being prepared through creating lists and things like that, you know, share knowledge with your team. I don't know if we're kind of bridging topics here, or is there anything with that, Mike?
Yeah, no, that I think that also falls into the best practices. You know, in the past sites, my site now, you know, we've created multiple lists on, you know, what happens if we lose city water, what happens if we lose power, and just to have that knowledge written down on paper. Like right now, my facilities technician is out on paternity leave, so we're passing a lot of those responsibilities on to a temporary technician who's not very familiar with our site. So that's where, you know, that knowledge being down on a list on a piece of paper, you know, tangible, you can touch it, see it, and, you know, now that person, it's easier to get them in the mix when something goes on so that they can respond.
I think that's a pretty global topic too, for any business you're in. Cause if it's all up in someone's head, like how would you handle it, right? With maternity leave or paternity leave or anything like that. And, you know, if someone's out for any reason at all.
Yep. We tend to do cheat sheets as well. So a piece of equipment goes down, you know, right near the piece of equipment, we have a cheat sheet. How does this go back up? How does this reset? So
smart. So even I could go in there and do it, Mike?
You could.
I could figure it out. Would you let me?
Very simple, step by step.
Good. That is simply perfect.
I prefer to be on the phone when someone is performing those steps, but I'm trying to let go of that as well.
Ooh, talk about that. When you say let go, is it, do you prefer to like touch and fix things yourself, or like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. Coming from a technician background where I was hands-on, you know, that's probably another one of my challenges, you know, getting into more of a management role is letting go of some of the smaller, you know, what seems to be smaller tasks, and, you know, allowing the technicians to have that freedom to fail on their own.
Sure. They say that not failure, but experience is the best teacher. So
yeah, that was how I learned for the most part. You know, I had some good teachers as well, but you know, I had a lot of times when, you know, nothing bad, but I screwed up. you learn more from that sometimes than from the actual learning about the task and the steps.
100% agree. Oh yeah. I might be racing forward, pull me back. But I remember we had also talked, Mike, about maybe inspections and preparedness for inspections. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you talked about test runs.
Yeah. So we, you know, we're a startup company. I don't think we're imminent on inspections. Well, we've had a MWRA inspection already. We've had a couple, but we are trying to build that culture of preparing for inspections and audits, you know, because they could happen at any time. So we have a binder down at the front desk. You know, we do practice runs. So, you know, the binder will, anyone who's involved, like who might show up, there's a tab for each potential inspector. And then, you know, everything from who needs to be notified. So sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's more than one person. So who's notified, you know, right down to what is the procedure to kind of house them in a temp conference room until they're met. You know, we don't want people just wandering around the building.
Who built that? That sounds like a great system.
It was a team effort, you know, multiple different people, you know, kind of all pulled together, built, got some ideas and put together the binder, and that sits right at the front desk. So even, you know, down to the receptionist, she knows what to do when, you know, what her role is.
Have you ever staged it so there's, you know, it's a difficult test run or, how do they go?
They usually go pretty well. I mean, it's all step by step. It's not, you know, we don't have very complex tasks. You know, and then the notification process goes. The worst thing we've had to deal with is, you know, the main contact not being available with, you know, hybrid schedules or people being out. So, but, you know, we try to keep backup and, you know, just make sure everybody knows how to respond to situations.
Perfect. So what's the cadence? How often do you do a test run? Because I don't hear a lot of people talking about this. Maybe we just haven't broached the topic, but how often?
They're usually pretty random. I would say we try to hit each one at least every year, but if, you know, especially if we happen to not do so well, then that might become a little more frequent. but we did respond pretty well when we tested, and, you know, so we try to keep it as needed.
Excellent. What's an example of, like, when you say if didn't do so well, like what could have failed or what wouldn't go right?
Well, I mean, not having the right information, not having the proper documentation.
Got it.
You know, even something as far as, you know, giving someone a tour of the space that they're here to look at, and it's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to keep everything audit ready and neat and tidy. You know, we don't want to create any the illusion that they need to dig deeper than what they're here to see.
Love it. And I think, you know, so if it doesn't go well, what's at stake? Like, you guys work with, if I'm getting this correct, neurological disorders or cures for them, or treatment for schizophrenia, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia. I mean, this is pretty serious work that you're doing. So, you know, yeah, what's at stake if things don't go right?
Well, there could be multiple. One, you know, being potential, you know, if it was the FDA and they were checking on drugs or processes, then, you know, that could go very bad. That could cause delays in what we do and, you know, the releases of some of our drugs. If it's, you know, not that anything is significantly less critical, but, you know, if it was an inspection on, you know, our wastewater system, you know, there could be potentially a fine. There could be, you know, it just doesn't.
It's fair to say there's plenty at stake, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. And so I'm running through every 12 different scenarios in my head right now, and it's not, failing is not good.
Yeah, we got it. Failure is not an option.
Yeah. So not to mention the, you know, we're all professionals as well. And, you know, we don't want to fail. You know, we want to be the best at what we do.
Well, and I think that's why we're talking about this, right? It's not about the failure. It's just like, how do you best prepare to succeed? And I think that's exactly what you're illustrating with us right now, Mike. Yep. You know, these test runs, the documentation, the audit manuals and everything is fantastic. So obviously you guys are very prepared. It's just, you know, go to best case, worst case scenarios. And I think, Well, I'm learning from what you're running us through right now. It's great. You told me a story about, I think you said one of your lab techs or facility techs is going on paternity leave, right? And but I wanted to back up if you could kind of run us through. It goes to the point of how you look for somebody, right? They might be a great plumber, they might be a great technician, but I think if I recall, can they work in a lab environment? You made that distinction. You mind tell us the story of how you came upon this person and how he ended up working with you?
Yeah, absolutely. My background wasn't originally a lab either, but you know, when I first started in life sciences, you know, my biggest difficulty was just knowing, what can you do? What can you not do in a lab setting? When we were at the point where we were looking for a technician, you know, we put a job description out, posted the job, and we got a few people, candidates that, you know, we interviewed. Yeah, some were highly skilled, some were, you know, very experienced outside of, you know, the life science setting. But we also looked at this position as this is going to be somebody that's going to be working heavily in a lab. So to try to alleviate any growing pains, we looked for someone with some lab experience and not so much, just working in a lab, but just knowing the ins and outs, knowing how to gown up to go into the vivarium or how to enter a lab, put on whatever type of PPE, read the signage. So there's a lot of different aspects that go into it. But and it's funny because I happened to be walking out of my house one day on my way. I don't even remember where I was going, but I look across the street and the Amazon driver looked familiar. And it was, he worked as, I knew him because he worked as a security guard at EMD Serono. And
okay.
Called his name. He turned around and we got to talking, and he had just gotten laid off from a construction job. So he had the skills we were looking for in a facilities technician, but knowing him from that previous job, you know, he was in the labs every day. He was in the penthouse checking on our equipment in the middle of the night when, you know, the guys that were on call would get the call and not want to drive in unless they had to. So they'd ask him for the update, they'd ask him to reset the equipment. So he kind of got that crash course on life science equipment and how to work in a lab, how to go in the lab and check on equipment. So it ended up being a perfect fit, and he's been here, over 2 years now.
That's awesome. I remember.
It's crazy small world.
Yeah, I love it. It's like, so it's very random too, right? Well, yes and no. Like, you knew him from EMD. He knew your world very well. And there he is delivering for Amazon, and now he's working with you again. That's fantastic. It's awesome. We could cover a multitude of things. I selfishly want to jump into the other things we talked about recently, Mike, and that's more so you, right?
Yeah. Like
we can jump back to facilities in a few minutes if you want.
But not that interesting.
No, yeah, you are. It's so we just spent, you know, whatever time learning from you, right? About, you know, best practices. Just to, you know, to recap, right? You do test runs, you know, your preparedness, your communication trees and methods, and how to stay ahead of things. And when you hire someone, bring them in with lab experience or at least lab familiarity and the skills they need to do the job at hand too, right? So it's just, that was a nice global look at like what's happening in your world and what others could apply to. And if it's okay with you, can we flip to Huskies and football and family?
Sure.
Start wherever you want, man. I mean, like, if you want to tell us about some of your past, what you do and why I mentioned Huskies and how football and kids and everything fits in here.
Yeah. So, I played football, I guess kind of what got me into facilities in the first place. I was a carpenter for about almost 10 years, residential, commercial, construction, and I also played semi-pro football. So after my third knee surgery, I kind of made the decision to not want to deal with ladders and roofs and, you know, heavy duty construction. So I ended up finding a job in facilities.
And you were quarterback, right? For semi-pro?
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. although I probably was a better coach than player. At least my knees tell me that.
Did your tight end or your wide receivers treat you better, or do you care to say?
I was actually better friends with the linemen.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense.
The guys that protected me. Yep. So actually, some of my best friends today were my linemen.
Awesome. So, all right. So you had the knee trouble, and you knew you didn't want to be dealing with ladders and whatnot, and so that got you into facilities. Yep. And then I think you've walked through a few different positions and really like escalated as you went here.
Yeah, I started in a hospital setting, New England Rehab Hospital in Woburn. From there, I moved on to life science at EMD Serono. I was there almost 5 years and got into more of a management track, working for a couple IFM contractors, the JLLs, the Sodexos, Able Engineering. Mm-hmm. So I worked at sites like Pfizer in Cambridge, Millipore Sigma, and their three facilities in Burlington, Bedford, and Danvers. And then moved on to Pfizer in Andover, which is a GMP, you know, massive site.
I just wanted to ask for a distinction, Mike. We don't have to go down this road, but IFM versus FM. Anything you can share with the audience about, you know, the differences there, and you know, what's not better or not as good, but anything there to discuss?
I've kind of seen both sides of the fence, and I think, you know, there's advantages to IFM, and there's advantages to just having an in-house FM team.
I mean, is IFM, do they bring more resources because they're more, global or more?
They could. I mean, that's the idea. I've been on some sites where that's, you know, a better theory than practice. Mm-hmm. But it's all dependent on, you know, there's a lot of different companies out there now. It's, you know, the competition is, that's probably one of the bigger things I've seen is the turnover in technicians in IFM. You know, there's a lot of turnover, and, you know, the next company is usually offering that $1 more that gets a guy out the door. And, you know, whereas in-house, you have a team that's, they feel more at home. They want to be there. You know, they'll give up that dollar for that sense of.
Well, you're part of a team, and you got more culture, I would think too, right?
Yeah. We've built a great team here. I know that we work well together. Nobody wants to leave. Nobody, you know, not saying anybody won't, but nobody wants to.
Yeah. You got a good team down there. The good, and I think it's culture too. It's the way you treat each other.
Yeah.
Well, here we are jumping right back into facilities. We were talking football, but that's
always
okay.
Always comes back.
Yeah, let's go back and forth. I'm impressed with what you do with, I don't know what, if you want to talk about the dogs and the adoption that you guys do and some of the like the discussions around, can we keep this one when you foster them?
Yeah, we foster quite a few dogs. My wife, actually, she's hooked up with a couple of rescues in the area. And we had a husky, so we ended up getting another husky to keep him company. And then, you know, he was older, didn't want anything to do with the new dog. So we had to get a third dog to keep the second dog company. You know, and then after we got set up with the different rescues, it's like, you know, we get sent pictures. She's usually the first call when they get a husky in. And I always get the pictures, and she'll show me on her phone and tell me the sob story behind the dog. usually I can't say no either. So
right.
We end up with either fostering, or we've kept a couple. But we ended up fostering. We fostered at least three or four more. We're up to four now. So, and we have four kids as well. So the running joke in my family is that we're trying to be like the Stark family in Game of Thrones. Every kid has to have their own wolf.
That's great. How's the food bill, Mike?
That's crazy. I feel like every other day I'm running out for a new bag.
That's a good thing you guys do. That's a really good thing. You know, I think, didn't you share that one of the, and maybe you just said this, forgive me if you did, one of the dogs was an older dog and you took her in, and she's just vibrant and fun and has a good time with the family and the kids, right?
Yeah. So a family was getting rid of her. They got a new puppy. And yeah, I think their exact quote was, the kids love the puppy and she doesn't have many good years left. So we got her at 12, and a couple months ago, she turned 15. She still hops around like a little puppy, and you know, she's fitting well with our family and the other dogs. And you know, I can't picture not having her at this point.
Good for you, man. Yeah, that's awesome. So, and not many good years left. Apparently there were, and there are. So that's
great. She might live the others.
So, if I recall correctly, you're the oldest out of 10 in your family. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So I'm the oldest, and, not much of an age gap between all of them either. I think, the youngest is 13 years younger than me. So
brothers, sisters, how many?
Five brothers, four sisters.
Wow. Pretty evenly distributed. Yeah.
Just about. My mom was one of 14, seven boys, seven girls. So that's apparently where she got that from.
Big families.
I vowed to not be like her. So we only have four, not counting the dogs, but
you could say eight.
Yeah.
So what was it like? Go ahead. No, go ahead.
My oldest is 12. Haley, she's tall. She's doing great. They're so such smart kids. Haley's 12. Fallon's 8. Bronco is 3.5. And Zane is 2.
Awesome. Awesome. So 2 to 12.
It's actually Bronco too. Bronco is, he got named after my grandfather's favorite football player, Bronco Nagurski.
Awesome.
Played for the Chicago Bears in the 30s.
I'm sure he's proud of that.
Yeah, you got a pretty big name to live up to, so you better start with football soon.
Looks like you need to toss the pigskin around the yard a bit.
He's getting there.
That's awesome.
I'm glad I had the girls first, because that taught me a lot of patience.
Oh, I bet.
Otherwise, he'd be carrying refrigerators like the kid on Little Giants.
So what was it like for you, though, growing up with 9 brothers and sisters? Like, what? Yeah, I grew up in a smaller family. So what was that like?
It was pretty crazy. You know, we didn't have a big house either. So it was, you know, we were all pretty much packed in. But it was fun. I mean, we were really close. Me and my brother are only a year apart. So, you know, we were always close growing up. And, you know, it was cool seeing the younger ones grow up too, once I got out of the house and it was old enough and moved out.
Good for you, man. Well, that's a pretty broad spectrum. We've got semi-pro football, facilities management, Huskies, oldest of 10 and 4 kids. And Mike, I have to say, I've learned a lot from you over the years too, just watching, you know, we've known each other since you were at EMD, of course. Yep. And, yeah, it's been a pleasure learning from you, man. So, and being friends this whole time too, that's always a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, for coming on. Appreciate you being here on Facility Rockstars. And if I may, if anyone's interested, there's a newsletter that comes out every Tuesday morning, and we'll put the link in the pod so you can sign up if you like. It's just a lot of what Mike just talked about and a lot of facilities best practices. So thanks very much, Mike.
All right. Thank you, Jay.
All right. Have an awesome afternoon.
All right. Thanks, you as well.
It's a wrap. Another episode of Facility Rockstars is in the books. Facility Rockstars is sponsored by Colutus, operating the way you operate in order to make your life easier. Until next time, facilitate and rock on. Rock on.